by abstraction. Our problem is the measurement, and thus the construction of physical measures. That is a question of quantification and qualification. Since, according to Hegel, a measure is the unity of quantity and quality, which physicists also name dimension. The English term quantification constantly misleads to speak about numbers, where in truth the talk is about measures. Our problem is called physical measurement, as unity of quantification of and qualification, or on the construction of physical measures. Therein, we encounter the following set of problems. What are those physical operations which we note down in theoretical physics simply by mathematical operation symbols? Is the plus in 1 kilogram plus 1 kilogram the same symbol as in 1 second plus 1 second? Asking this question means to immediately recognize no. The association of two weights is not the same as the connection of two durations, etc. The concatenation of two lengths requires Euclidean geometry as a physical theory, because the very operation requires that long objects are aligned against each other in an angle of 180 degrees. Such determination of a measurement operation makes, of course, no sense with regards to seconds. The next question is, what do physicists actually mean when they say force equals momentum divided by duration? Is an impulse meant to be divided by a duration? That is simply nonsense. There must be clarity what kind of physical operation the formation of that proportion is. Physicists combine quantities by multiplication, as in P equals, momentum equals mass times velocity, which, however, is only explained if respective variables are meant to be numbers. How can we physically understand what a physicist does when he combines a mass and a velocity? We can raise these questions for all mathematical operation symbols in physical equations. And only therewith we actually pose the foundation of physics from solely physical grounds as a general problem. This work concerns physical objects and the operation and the problem of determining physical operations really in a strictly physical way. We are referring to domains of everyday work experience, where conditions for meaningful colloquial denominations, material body and motion, are practically sufficiently satisfied. When we step into a billiard room, we deal with physical objects and their physical behavior. Moving billiard balls change their mutual positions. Throughout their relative motion, these objects preserve the character of a physical body. After each collision, they remain solid, rigid objects, and they keep their identity if furnished with individual colors or numbers. In collisions, they solely undergo changes in their state of motion. According to the principle of inertia, three objects move on their own. Their state of motion is preserved until they hit the cushions or another ball. There are many types of interactions. In chemical interactions, which are called reaction, the chemical bond between atoms is changing. Quantum mechanical interactions involve changes of internal degrees of freedom as spin or particle generation. The collision on a billiard table is an example for a physical interaction. In the tradition of Euler, we call them interaction of motion. The German term is Bewegungswirkung, for those who speak German. We include contact interactions as billiard, but also gravitational interactions in a solar system or electromagnetic interactions between charged particles. In the following, we use the term interaction strictly in this empirical sense. we grasp an action impartially as the collective behavior of an interacting system. We determine the interaction of its elements with regard to their energetic and impulse behavior. Every new basic measure, length, duration, energy, momentum, inertial mass, has to be explained in words or by examples, because definition equations for basic quantities do not exist. Our example is the billiard table. The player executes the first break shot with the cue ball against object balls, which are racked tightly and initially at rest. After a generic collision, the object balls fly off into arbitrary directions and each with arbitrary momentum. In the picture, you have the initial state and the final state of motion. In the impact, the moving cue ball expands its potential of causing actions and eventually comes to rest. The cue ball is the one with an A. In return, the object balls fly off in an uncontrolled way. We make the experience that the heavier and the faster cue ball will cause more impact on the object balls than a slower would. We can order the kinetic energy of different cue balls by the effect of their impact on the same pile of object balls. Similarly, we compare the impulse of two billiard balls with regard to their physical behavior. In a collision, that ball of the two has more momentum, which overruns the other. What is that? Quick time.
Phil, do you have this weird feeling of lights that run the blackboard?
That travels back. I think it's at the back.
I hit lecture, but it's not. Okay,
is there ask them.
What's in lecture?
Oh, cheers. That's good. Yeah.
Well, that's
good. So we have vague pre-theoretic notions of energetic and impulse behavior. In a measurement, these pre-theoretic ordering relations, more energy and more impulse, are quantified.
Brilliant.
Yes.
What's the distinction between more energy and more impulse?
Yeah, we come to that throughout the course. So those notions are abstract. Mm-hmm. We refer to some to empirical processes, which you can show by example or explain by words. And to specify what those abstract notions mean requires to introduce the corresponding criterion. So we illustrate the active role of a physicist in basic physical measurements. That is not mathematical behavior. His operations are central concrete. Who would think that at a billiard table one acts as a physicist? When the player strikes, he is dealing with interactions of motion, in that empirical sense. One begins to behave as a physicist if one sorts and couples these actions in a controlled way. This is physical behavior because the physicist is dealing with energies and with numbers. This physical activity is a particular kind of human activity. It is the way how physicists construct experimental instruments to make energy and momentum measurable. We construct a measurement process which reproduces the effect of absorbing incident cue ball by object balls insofar as the incident cue ball finally comes to rest. On both sides, you have once a generic billiard collision. Initially, the cue ball has a state of motion, and at the end, it's basically at rest. And in the controlled replacement process, similarly, the cue ball comes in with same state of motion and eventually comes to rest. While in a generic billiard collision, all object balls fly off with arbitrary momentum, now the process is set up and controlled. As a result of absorbing incident cue ball, the object balls fly off in an organized way. Each ball represents a unit of momentum, and each behaves in the same way. In this process, we can count the number of congruent dynamical units. In this way, dynamical ordering relations with regard to energy and momentum become measurable. By means of this physical model, the energy and the momentum of incident cue ball is quantified. We construct a Gedanken model on the operation of a particle detector, a calorimeter. It contains a reservoir with physically equivalent particles, which are initially addressed and with which something will happen. An incoming particle will be slowed down in a cascade of successive collisions with those resting particles of the reservoir. Instead of a generic collision, we set up a cascade of collisions where the process is controlled by a team of physicists. As a result, a certain number of excited particles, which all have standardized velocity, will be knocked out of the calorimeter, as well as the number of energy carriers. You can imagine batteries. We built the calorimeter model from elementary building blocks. Our building block is a standardized interaction. To conduct a physical measurement, the physicist, let's name her Alice, may pick out a standard from a variety of possible actions of motions, which is reproducible and available anywhere and anytime and in any number. For example, Alice may provide a reservoir with springs and with objects which have the same dynamical behavior. Each two objects have the same inertia, which we can test when we collide them against each other. In such a test collision, none of the particles can overrun the other. We will call them unit objects from now on. Those billiard balls or whatever objects which have a one in them. Similarly, each two springs are set up with same energy. Alice can check that each two springs cause the same potential effect. We have to catapult our standard objects, those unit balls, in the same way. With respect to final state of motion, both springs have to expand the same potential of an action. According to the equipollence principle, their energy is identical. We will call Alice standard springs from now on energetic unit. So we talk about a concrete physical system where we have sources of energy, which we call energetic units. We can be realized by a standard spring. And we have real physical objects. In that case, those equivalent objects with same dynamical behavior, we call unit objects. For the purpose of basic dynamical measurements, a team of physicists provides a reservoir with dynamical measurement devices. It contains our standardized objects with equivalent impulse behavior, which we name unit object, our standardized springs with equivalent potential to cause an action, named energetic unit. And those energetic units can boost our unit objects into diametrically opposed directions with unit velocity. Our unit action, the compression of the spring, is reversible. Two diametrically opposed unit momenta can compress the standard spring. D'Alembert discusses the compression of equivalent springs up to a fixed mark. That is a very instructive approach. The action is quantified not by the depth of compression in one spring, but instead by the number of springs which are compressed by a fixed distance. In this way, one abstracts completely from the inner dynamics of the compression process. All unit actions, the compression of standard springs, which Alice can set up from her reservoir, are congruent to one another, because all charged or energetic springs are initially addressed, and because we all again act against initially resting objects in a physically equivalent way. Alice can associate two simple actions in a diachronic way, which means she can couple them one after the other at the same intermediate object, which is in the same state of motion. Here we concatenate two unit actions at our unit objects, which in between both interactions is in a state of rest. For a uniformly moving observer, Bob, this action will involve the same physical objects. For Bob, the initial and final state of motion for the same spring and both unit objects transforms in a covariant way. Under the condition of Galileic kinematics, where measured values of motion transform simply by vectorial addition. The unit action which Alice sets up from her reservoir is an inelastic collision. One possible realization is the reversible compression of a standard spring. Suitably moving observer Bob will see the composite action as an elastic transversal collision between equivalent objects. One particle kicks in from below with a fixed velocity and rebounds antiparallel. The other object moves with same velocity into a direction which is slightly rotated by a corresponding angle. Alice can set up the elastic composition of two unit actions with every scattering angle and with arbitrary given velocity. Suitably moving observer Bob will see the composite action as an elastic transversal collision. For fixed horizontal velocity, any strength of the transversal kick can be realized. By consecutive association of these transversal collisions, we can construct an impulse reversion process. We have incident particle coming in from the left. It gets one transversal kick at the bottom. Then one partner of, is it Bob or Alice? Of Alice's team gives it another kick in the middle, and eventually a third kick at the top causes a complete impulse reversion of the incident particle. We introduce a measurement method where a sequence of congruent actions is set up and coupled. The course of their couplings is controlled from the outside by a team of physicists. Therefore, in every individual action, it only matters which change in the state of motion is ultimately attained, irrespective of details in its spatiotemporal progression. For the matching concatenation of a sequence of actions, the physicist controls the initiation of each individual action timely and at suitable position, such that our impulse reversion effect is achieved. We presuppose our dynamical measurement devices, our unit actions, only as completed processes. Its inner dynamics remains undetermined. It is the active role of the physicist to couple these congruent units. Our measurement of energy momentum in a fundamental manner will boil down to counting those congruent dynamical units in an organized way. So we have seen the impulse reversion process which the team of Alice's three colleagues can realize. Similarly, let Bob's team of physicists take care of steering an impulse reversion process for a faster incident particle, the black one, which comes in with faster initial velocities. Bob has access to the same reservoir of dynamical units. He can cause the same elastic transversal collisions. However, as the incident particle is faster, it will only lead to a smaller scattering angle. we can set up the initial velocities of the particle which Alice is going to reverse and the particle which Bob Steam is going to reverse such that each two of those congruent transversal kicks lead to the same deviation in the direction of motion as one transversal kick of Alice. Eventually, Bob's team of physicists has to generate six of those transversal kicks in order to achieve the same impulse reversion for his fast particle as Alice had to do in the case of reversing the direction of her slower particle. In a coordinated effort, Alice and Bob's team of physicists set up and control a sequence of elastic transversal collisions in order to provide impulse reversion process for incoming particle with velocity v1 and analogous for incoming particle with velocity v2. We have chosen the velocities according to some matching conditions for their scattering angles, which is purely kinematical and which does not require any dynamics. We can align the one impulse reversion process for Bob's fast particle from the left with two impulse reversion processes for those two slower particles which come in from the right. So here we have the fast particle, which is black, which comes from the right and gets six kicks in order to be reversed, and the brown slow particle comes in from the upper top and it only requires three kicks. We align them such that part of the transversal kicks which Bob has to generate are perpendicular or are perfectly matched with the direction of the transversal kick into the opposite direction which Alice generates for her slow particle. That's why the incoming particles have to be shifted slightly in order to have matching transversal kicks. We model the elastic collision of one particle from the left with two particles from the right by means of unit actions. We presuppose both that collision interaction and our unit actions solely as completed processes with regard to changes in their final state of motion. We do not presuppose any mathematical relation regarding the course of their inner progression. Thus, unit actions taken by themselves are also unquantified. But these units are congruent among one another. By coupling dynamical units from the external calorimeter reservoir, we concatenate a sequence of unit actions, so it's transversal kicks. The course of their couplings is controlled from the outside by a team of physicists. They assure that each unit action is initiated at right place and moment and in the right way. They control a series of transversal kicks. Their construction method involves three steps. They independently fire dynamical units from an external reservoir against incident particles, the ones which come from the left and the right. They generate elastic transversal collisions, which successively turn around those particles kick after kick. Separately against each of those incident particles, we control a sequence of congruent transversal kicks to reverse their direction of motion. They align the impulse reversion processes for all incident particles such that, pairwise at diametrically opposed locations, all dynamical units can be recycled back into the external reservoir. So see what happens when we have one incident particle coming from the left and one from the right. Both Alice and Bob will generate transversal kicks at diametrically opposed locations. They use their energetic units, their batteries, in order to kick two initially resting reservoir particles into perpendicular motion. That is our unit action. It can be the expansion of a standard spring. Alice will do the same thing. They both use the same unit action. After expanding those standards, the energy of those standard springs, the spring doesn't disappear, but it has no potential of causing any further action anymore. But as an effect, those initially resting reservoir particles are kicked into perpendicular motion. The upper one will kick into the incident particle, and similarly for Alice's intervention. After those two transversal elastic transversal collisions, the recoil particle of Bob's intervention and of Alice's interventions move away in diametrically opposed directions. And eventually, we can just take each pair of diametrically moving unit particles and absorb them back into the calorimeter reservoir, such that a particle which moves up and down is slowed down and gives back the energetic unit which Bob had to expend, and the other pair of those two particles comes to rest while recycling the energetic unit which Alice had expended. So we don't know what those unit actions do, but it doesn't matter because we are only temporarily expended, but at the end we are all recycled.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Why do we need the top and the bottom? They seem to be unconnected processes. Why do they need to be lined up?
We line them up in order to. The whole exercise is about taking that incident particle and that incident particle and producing an exact impulse reversion. Where at the end, that guy moves back into the opposite direction and the same one for the other. The way how we do it is we invite Alice and Bob to go to their reservoir of energetic units at the calorimeter, each takes a pair of resting unit objects and catapult them into the way, such that successively those two incident particles get rotated. And at the end, we can recycle all their temporarily expended dynamical units. Those are external interventions back into the reservoir. We take each pair of antiparallel particles, and when we absorb them back in the calorimeter, we will generate the same energetic unit which we expended in the first place. Remember, we want to build a physical model for an elastic collision, so which means we can allow for external interventions, but only temporarily. In the end, we have all to be recycled or absorbed again. Yes?
A quick question. Do you mean these two epsilons to be the same?
Yes, it's the same.
There are two balls, one which collides with the test particle coming in, the other, that one and the one below it.
It's the same, yeah. So we talk about unit actions, and initially the unit actions was generated by taking our energetic unit, the standard spring, and kicking two initially resting reservoir particles into perpendicular motion. The motion is of the same magnitude in a perpendicular direction. Here we don't take a source of energy, a spring which generates those kicks with unit velocity, but only with the epsilon fraction. So that's why the magnitude of those two velocities is the same. And after the transversal kick, which we just discussed before, the magnitude of the velocity of the recoil particle is preserved, except it bounces off antiparallel, which means those two particles indeed have the same velocity, it's the same epsilon.
So
this control to be in such a way that this happens.
Yes, yes. That's what we've been doing in the previous slides. Yes.
Sorry, Bruno?
Yes.
How do you control that? So it's not a normal collision. Because
are you pointing here?
The ball is
I cannot extrapolate your finger. Are you pointing here? Here?
Yes. I am comparing these two pictures.
Yes,
so
yes.
The ball on the left is kicking the ball with velocity 2.
Yes, yes.
And then it's bouncing with the same energy as it was. Yeah,
yes.
But in general, if I just make two balls colliding like that,
exactly,
the second one is going to lose.
Very good observation. Those processes do not occur naturally. They require the active intervention, the active participation of a steering physicist. And that aspect will be important. We come back to that later on.
So you are really controlling that collision also?
Not me. That's Alice and Bob.
Okay.
How do you recycle the things at the end? Don't you need more
We are going to go through more constructions. And let's leave details to the discussion. It's all the responsibility of those physicists who are actively intervening. So,
Bruno.
Yes.
So this reminds me of the Feynman picture.
Exactly.
Scattering.
Very good. Feynman's picture for the scattering. He wanted to generate an equation for relativistic dynamics, and he considers those elastic transversal collisions. First, he's in the center of mass frame where things behave symmetrically, and then by boosting the whole situation, you end up at those transversal kicks, and that's how we motivated the relativistic mass formula.
If I'm thinking of field theory, that instead of counterpropagating pairs, I was thinking particle anti-particle creations that annihilate, and I could think of a Feynman diagram having, no direct interaction between the two point particles, but these mediated interactions. Are you telling me that Feynman had something that was even more analogous to what you're describing here? It's not about.
So that has nothing to do with Feynman diagrams because there's no change in particle generation, etc. That's only about interactions where we compare an initial state of motion and a finite state of motion.
Right, but I could write Feynman calculation for two electrons scattering off of one another.
Yeah, you can, but you don't need to.
Sort of virtual photons mediating that interaction.
I see.
Analogy between these sort of pairs of particles that are counterpropagating.
I see.
Being like the virtual photons that mediate
the interaction
between those two particles.
So what we are doing here, we talk about the effect of unit actions, and the unit action is defined by having an in state and an out state. We completely abstract from the process of the inner dynamics, but we don't have to. It's just fine to. And similarly, in those Feynman considerations, the interaction is also not described in a continuous way of progression, but rather is the discrete change of the in and out state is mediated by something which Feynman calls a photon. Yes. So both Feynman's treatment and that treatment have in common that we talk about discrete actions. One mediated by a photon, that one mediated by a physicist, a team of physicists which have access to a reservoir of unit actions. And that team of physicists doesn't need to specify the inner dynamics of those unit actions. He just has to assure that all of them are congruent. That's our starting point for quantification. So in the end, the impulse of each incident object, which comes in from the left and which comes in from the right, is exactly reversed. Physicists mediate their indirect collision by means of a dynamical units from an external reservoir. Those were temporarily expanded, but finally all recycled back into the reservoir. Every act of the physicist is reversible. We can generalize the configuration in two ways. In the number of incident particles, we can have one fast particle from the left and n particles which come in from the right. And we can also refine the scattering angle after each transversal kick from the calorimeter reservoir. In an elastic collision of n plus 1 equivalent objects, that's what happens outside the box, one unit object comes in from left with initial velocity, vn, and a bundle of n unit objects comes in from right with velocity v1, which is much slower, under suitable orientations. In the final state, the impulse of all objects is exactly reversed.
Sorry, yes. Can I ask you another question? No. So I'm not sure I am understanding. So you wanted to modelize somehow this elastic
collision of generic objects.
But this, in the previous, so what I was asking you before, it was already an elastic collision.
It was. Before we have an elastic collision of equivalent objects, we must behave in a symmetrical way. That's not a problem.
So
what we want to model is the elastic collision between generic objects, which can have different mass. But we cannot postulate those kinematical equations. We have to derive them from principles. And how to do it, you will see on the next slide.
Okay, so the physicists, they knew since the beginning how to do elastic collisions between the units.
Between equivalent objects. That's clear.
And now, okay.
Yes. And now we make the step. Yes. Okay. It's part of the model building. A refinement of congruent transversal kicks by those reservoir particles against incident elements from the left and right changes the orientation of the matching bundle. In the limit, the spreading of the bundle goes to zero, and the bundle of n incident elements on the right side turns into a ray. In the refinement limit, our physical model for an elastic collision between one unit object from the left and the spreading bundle of n unit objects, at the moment those are still equivalent to each other, from the right, approximates the ideal of an elastic collision between different composites of equivalent objects. We have one object from the left and now a composite of n of those equivalent objects, which are kind of bound together and which come from the right. And it approximates the ideal of their elastic collision to any adjustable precision. You just have to continue refining. The limit reproduces the elastic collision between a composite of n elements with velocity v and one unit object with velocity n times v. We learned something about elastic collisions which we did not presuppose before. We did not assume the kinematical relations in an elastic collision between two generic objects. We do not presuppose the way in which velocities of two generic objects change in an elastic collision. The trick is to mediate their direct collision by an indirect replacement process. The physical model solely consists of elastic collisions between equivalent objects, which must behave in a symmetrical way. That's where we started. From the layout of those inseparable unit actions, we abstract from the inner dynamics. Each is taken as if it were mediated by a photon as a discrete process that we only guarantee for in and out state. So from the layout of those inseparable unit actions, we can specify the kinematic characterization. Now we know more about elastic collisions than before. We will use those elastic longitudinal collisions to construct a deceleration cascade. We are on the way to construct a calorimeter. If Alice moves suitably relative to Bob, then she will see Bob's longitudinal collision, the one upstairs, with different measured values of velocity. It will involve the same objects, but each gets that little extra component of velocity. For Alice's perspective of the same process, her fast particle, that one here, kicks in from the left and elastically collides into n particles, which are initially addressed. Those are her calorimeter, or her reservoir particles. eventually the fast incident particle slows down. It goes from n plus 1 times unit velocity to n minus 1 times the velocity, modulo sine. And those initially resting particles get kicked out, all with the same standard velocity. We illustrate the way how physicists construct experimental instruments to make energy and momentum measurable. We construct a physical model on the operation of a particle detector, a calorimeter, which reproduces the absorption action of an incident of an individual object, that ball, that unit object in the middle, in a calorimeter reservoir in pink. The participation of the physicist involves the act of controlling the process and sorting those congruent unit actions, which are being mobilized. We mediate the absorption interaction by an indirect replacement process. A team of physicists set up a controlled process in a series of elastic longitudinal collisions. They couple the incident object into a resting reservoir. Their absorption method involves two steps. They place resting reservoir particles into the way of incident object. That happens on the upper line. In that case, they place 9 resting reservoir objects into the way, and they generate the elastic longitudinal collision. And and the result of that elastic longitudinal collision we know. The incident object rebounds with a reduced velocity. It came in with 10 times unit velocity. Now it rebounds only with 8 times unit velocity. And it kicks those respective reservoir particles into unit motion, in that case, into twice the unit motion. Successively, the incident object oscillates inside the deceleration cascade and kicks new initially resting particles out of the reservoir. We have a left, we have a right collision, we have a left collision, and so on. Those operating physicists, we can accumulate and process those dynamical units, which get kicked out on both sides of the calorimeter reservoir. We have, on the right side, we have 9 initially resting objects, and on the left side, we have 7. Both get kicked into diametrically opposed directions with same magnitude of velocity. So we can take those 7 and those 7. We represent an antiparallel pair, and that's why we can recycle them into dynamical units. And the two leftover recoil particles, we just get kicked out of the reservoir. We will represent momentum units. In the end, the incident object comes to rest inside the calorimeter, the particle in the middle. An incoming particle will be slowed down in a cascade of successive collisions with those resting particles of the calorimeter. We set up a cascade of collisions where the process is controlled by a team of physicists. We control the preparation and coupling of many unit actions. Remember, all we do is we mobilize unit actions, such that the reservoir elements fly off in an organized way. As a result of absorbing the incident object, a certain number of reservoir elements will be knocked out of the calorimeter with standardized velocity, as well as the number of energy units. We specify the absorption action of the incident object in the calorimeter reservoir by a replacement process. This physical model consists on every level of the deceleration cascade solely of congruent unit actions. In this model, we can count the number of equivalent dynamical units which get extracted from the calorimeter reservoir. Alice provides, in that particular case, Alice provides a reservoir with a total of 25 initially resting reservoir particles. That's our incident particle, which comes in with 10 times standard velocity in the beginning. After a controlled cascade of elastic longitudinal collisions, which are eventually built up from those congruent unit actions, the incident object comes to rest. So that incident particle eventually is slowed down. And those 25 initially resting particles from the calorimeter get transformed into 10 pairs of anti-parallel objects, which represent units of, which can be converted into units of energy, and those units, and each of that pair represents a unit of energy, and all those units of energy are congruent or perfectly equivalent to one another. Therefore, we can count them, and therefore, we have a reliable quantification. And we have, furthermore, five unit objects, which all represent the standard momentum, and that's why it gives us a reliable momentum quantification. So far, we have constructed various models. Is that already physics? No, you may call it engineering in Gedanken. We must examine the physical meaning of these models. We look at the physical attributes, energy and momentum. These arise from abstraction. Remember, we talk about the measurement as a unit of quantification and qualification. If quantification is the process which leads to quantity, qualification is the process which leads to qualities, in that case to dimensions. Where do we come from? From abstraction. Now we come to Bill's question, the first one. So in an abstraction, what is an abstraction? In an abstraction, we regard the common quality of two empirical objects for itself without needing to consider the dissimilarity of those compared objects in other regards. We focus on one attribute which both have in common, and we don't care about anything else where we might differ. Helmholtz explains, bodies whose weights we are comparing can be made from most different materials, different shape and volume. The weight which we set equal is only one of their attributes and obtained by abstraction. We are only justified to call those bodies themselves weights and designate these weights as quantities in circumstances where we can disregard all other properties of these bodies. On the basis of everyday work experience, we roughly know what is meant by length, duration, potential to cause action, striking power, or impulse. The German word for striking power is Schwungkraft, or impetus. It's a vague pre-theoretic notion. Their precise physical meaning is specified by means of pre-theoretic ordering relations. And those ordering relations start in empirical practice. So we have the ordering relation of length. Imagine you have two long objects. If they lie on top of each other, one will cover the other. Similarly, the ordering relation for duration, if two processes begin simultaneously, one will last longer than the other. The processes can be the time it takes for the pointer to go once, to complete one full loop, and the duration of my talk, and you will see which processes takes longer. Similarly, that's Bill's question. We have a vague pre-theoretic ordering relation for energy. Imagine you have two energetic sources, objects which have the potential to cause action, like a charged bow or like a moving object which you can eventually absorb in a calorimeter, or a battery which you can discharge. And imagine you take two of those charged sources of energy and couple them against the same system. When you look at the effect which each of those energetic sources generates, and that source of energy, or in the case of springs, that spring has more energy whose effect exceeds the effect of the other. So if you have like two springs, and you couple them against our equivalent standard objects, you can discharge one spring and see how it catapults away those two standard objects into diametrically opposed directions, and you can take the other spring and do the same thing. You look at the effect, and if the effect of one spring exceeds the effect of the other, then you know that one, the first one, has more energy. That's the equipollence principle, and it goes back to Leibniz. Equipollence means measure the cause by its effect, and eventually it amounts to conservation of energy, but it's a methodical principle. And last, we have the pre-theoretic ordering relation for momentum. So imagine two objects which move against one another and which end up in an inelastic collision. That one of the two objects has more momentum, which overruns the other. You can think about a big, chubby guy and a small person, and if they collide into each other and the big one overruns the other, we know the big one has more momentum. Okay, that's all vague pre-theoretic and does not require any prior quantification. In German, the same and momentum is the momentum equivalence relation. The equivalence relation for inertial mass is just a special case where the two objects initially have to have the same magnitude of velocity. So in German, the same circumstances of those comparison methods are expressed with simple denominations, which have a direct colloquial meaning. It is überdecken, überdauern, übersteigen, überrennen. We carry out each comparison by a practical operation. Each method is of a physical nature. They are universally reproducible in an observer-independent way. Under the abstraction energy, respective impulse, we regard individual objects, like moving billiard balls, charged bows, batteries, etc., solely as substitutable representatives of their common quality, which is potential to cause action or striking power. Equal energy is not a formal convention, but a practical question. We regard two sources of energy and momentum as equivalent if we can substitute each other, so those objects substitute one another, in respective practical methods of comparison. It's an abstraction from empirical grounds. Our measurement theoretical foundation of basic dynamical quantities is circularity free. We do not presuppose equations of motion and other mathematical formulations of conservation laws or symmetries. Every new basic measure, energy, momentum, inertial mass, has to be explained in words or by examples, because definition equations of basic quantities do not exist. We can measure momentum, inertial mass, and energy in a fundamental manner. For the momentum measurement, we start from the pre-theoretic ordering relation of one object overrunning the other, that little p. We represent the impulse unit by the impulse behavior of Alice standardized objects, which she's using in we use as impulse unit Alice standard objects, so unit balls, in the deceleration from the state of unit motion to the state of rest. When that state of motion of a standard object happens, that represents the expense of one unit of momentum. We can associate the momentum of two objects indirectly by coupling two consecutive absorption actions in a calorimeter. And remember our calorimeter model. After the absorption, we generate the calorimeter extract, and a partial output of that calorimeter extract, the one which contains those impulse units, is our physical model for momentum. So eventually we have an incident particle which can be absorbed in a calorimeter, and after absorption we have the calorimeter extract. Those are two physical objects. Both have the same momentum, which we do not claim, which we have to prove. And the way how to prove it is with regard to a practical test if one overruns the other. So now we have two physical objects, the one, the measurement object, and our material model, which comes as, which we obtain as a calorimeter extract. In that model, we can count the number of congruent units. Those are all those unit balls, which all have the same unit motion. And eventually, we can, we already know that those objects have the same impulse. However, the impulse of the object which is being measured, it is equal to the impulse of the of our physical model, but the physical model we can quantify. We count how many units are involved. That number, I highlighted in blue, that's the first time where mathematics pops up, times the momentum which each of those momentum units represents. So here we have we have a physical measure of momentum of the incident particle, and it is quantified by a number of momentum units in our physical model times the momentum which the unit represents. That is a physical measure. And the physical measure is the unit of both a quantity and a quality. It is the quality of the measurement unit, and it is the quantity of how many of them are contained in a physical model. Similarly, we can quantify energy, the pre-theoretic notion of energy. We start from the pre-theoretic ordering relation by comparing the source of energy with regard to their potential effect in an absorption interaction in the calorimeter. That's the equivalence relation. We represent the energetic unit by the energetic behavior of Alice's standardized source of energy, her standard springs, which in her unit actions. And we can associate, we need an equivalence relation, we need those units, and we need a way to associate those units to construct a physical model, to do the same thing like here. How do we associate them? We associate the kinetic energy of two moving particles by absorbing them in the same calorimeter. Similarly, the calorimeter extract provides a physical model for energy, and the kinetic energy of individual particle becomes measurable by the number of extractable energetic units and its unit energy. So everything in black is empirical practice, and those two blue numerical values which are being highlighted, that's the first encounter of mathematics. From quantification of pre-theoretic ordering relations, we obtain basic physical quantities. The construction of the underlying physical model for calorimetric measurements relies on physical principles. They include principle of causality, of inertia, the impossibility of a perpetuum mobile, the principle of sufficient reason, that there has to be a reasonable external cause to generate change of motion, the equivalence principle, and superposition principle. Those principles have to be mobilized in order to construct the calorimeter model, which we have only briefly sketched out here. And we also rely on principles of methodical nature, most notably a basic measurement as a doubling of physical measures. In a basic measurement, we do not only have the measurement object and the measure which the object represents, we double the measure. We produce a physical model which has the same quality, and then we go look into the model and count how many units are involved. So the congruence principle is essential. And the physical model consists of congruent dynamical units. We need to be congruent in order to allow for a reliable quantification. The quantification has to be reproducible. It's not just a mere ordering parameter. It's not a parametrization. It is a physical quantity which has a concrete physical meaning, namely with regard to that model. and eventually the equipollence principle, Leibniz's, of measuring the course of a potential action by its kinetic effect. Last but not least, a basic physical measurement also depends on a social condition, which Massey pointed out. Physicists have to cooperate to construct material models. Everybody has to know when and where to pick the next initially resting unit object from the calorimeter reservoir and how to catapult it in the way of the incident particle to generate impulse reversion or absorption. Basic physical quantities are a joint product and not generated individually. In the calorimeter model, the calorimeter model constitutes a relation between basic dynamical measures. Alice can conduct basic measurements for inertial mass, kinetic energy, and momentum. Each is independently quantified by the number of equivalent elements in her physical model and the unit measure which each of them represents. The relation between Alice's physical quantities and her physical quantities are the number of energy units, of momentum units, of mass units, and of multiples of velocity. Those ones she can count independently. She doesn't need to define one quantity in terms of the others. We have measurements of those dynamical notions in a fundamental manner, each on its own. The relation between Alice's physical quantities follows from the interrelation also of respective unit objects, her energetic units and her impulse units in her calorimeter model. We justify equations between physical quantities of energy and momentum from the design of underlying calorimeter collision cascade.
Rina, just to say your talk has outlasted.
Yes, yes, yes. So I'm almost, yes, almost done. So if Alice constructs the calorimeter model in Galilei kinematics, then her measured values for kinetic energy, impulse, inertial mass, and velocity satisfy quantitative equations, so those blue ones in the middle, in which numerical values occur in the form measure divided by unit measure. Okay, so those quantitative equations, or we call them fundamental equations, do not define what energy is in terms of mass and velocity. We just express a mere coincidence between fundamental physical measures, which can all be measured individually. That is a physical law, not a definition. We obtain fundamental equations from a physical deviation, not by a formal mathematical definition. So to quickly wrap up,
how would you come to these equations from what you have so far?
So you just go into the calorimeter model. In that model, you count how many energetic units can be extracted, how many of those momentum units, mass units, etc. And then you make proofs. So proofs take like 20, 30 lemmas and propositions to show. And once you are done, you have a general proof for those fundamental equations based on physical and methodical principles, without any prior mathematical presupposition.
So to imagine like 30 slides in between now.
Yeah, we have only finite time. So let's address the issue of derived quantities. The analysis of the spatiotemporal evolution is linked to practical steering effort. Already the impulse reversion process, external intervention of physicists, that's a steering intervention. We steer, we mobilize the dynamic units from the calorimeter and steer the objects involved. In a physical system, we cannot turn off the interaction between its elements, though we can do the contrary. We can include additional actions. Physicists can temporarily couple their calorimeter into a system, into an interacting system, to prepare the initial state of motion of individual elements. Oops. That's represented by those red dotted lines. That's just a practically instantaneous intervention which which sets up the initial conditions, and then steer the course of intrinsic action. That's the green segment which we represent horizontally. By controlled association of external steering actions, the red ones, and consecutive segments of intrinsic action, the physicist can control the course of intrinsic action and analyze corresponding steering effort. So if the physicist starts with a system in that configuration and wants to go anywhere in configuration space, he can do so by controlled steering actions. All he has to do is to steer with the right amount at the right time, and eventually the system evolves into any corner of configuration space he wants. Provided basic physical quantities, those ones we now assume as given, length, duration, energy, momentum, we can introduce more differentiated terminology suitable for analyzing continuous evolution. Now, we define force of intrinsic action as a meaningful derived physical quantity and displacement work in steered actions. We determine properties and interrelations of these derived physical quantities. For example, under the conditions of Galilei kinematics, one has to, if one introduces, remember, momentum and duration are fundamental physical quantities. If we introduce a derived quantity, namely their ratio, as a force, that ratio of those two quantities depends on the respective action and the initial conditions of those actions. And only if that ratio of those derived of momentum and duration for a given action is independent of the initial condition of the action, then a notion of force makes sense at all. So in the classical case, you can prove it. In a relativistic case, there are corresponding variations. From the differentiated specification of momentum evolution, we induce Newton's equations for the evolution of motion. Now we have Newton's third axiom, only now. Similarly, one can address the principle of least action. What we can do here for a given action which involves freely, which means isolated from external steering interventions, we can steer a Hamilton-type variation of the course of intrinsic action and look at the corresponding associated steering effort. We examine the variational analysis from a physical perspective. The variation of the free course of intrinsic action involves an active physicist as well. We examine the physical process behind basic variation maneuvers, the coupling of extrinsic steering actions into the course of intrinsic action. For the variational analysis of the steering effort, we compare two physical processes, the steered action and the free involving action. So that action evolves freely, and that thing is a steering intervention, a free segment, another steering interaction, and until we reunite back. For every local Hamilton-type variation of the free evolution of intrinsic action, the variation of Hamilton's quantity of action is positive definite. That's something one has to show. Steered action, in contrast to free evolving actions, are associated with extra steering effort. That's my last picture. So what have we done? We begin from a physical action, here the one on the billiard table, and we arrive at a mathematical action. More precisely, an action functional. In the beginning, all actions, billiard actions or unit actions with springs, etc., are physically undetermined. In the end, we are determined by physical measures. In between, the practical and theoretical steps of their are the practical and physical steps of their physical determination. That was the message to show. Step by step, the physical terminology is constructed from empirical grounds. we reconstruct the formation of the theory in the resulting formalism, mathematical terms inherit physical meaning, and their interrelation genetically unfolds. Each step in the development of new physical concepts is the product of a working process. We grasp the scientific work of a physicist, their generation of abstract notions, as a production process. One can understand the origin of basic physical quantities from an empirical basis, without any mathematical presuppositions, the active role of a team of physicists, and the genesis of the mathematical formulation. On one side is the empirical practice, the stuff in black, everything which is highlighted in black. And on the other, the birth of mathematical formalism. So here we encounter the first mathematical objects, physical quantities, and then we, from the model, we can prove their fundamental equations. And then by doing some analysis, we can introduce meaningful derived physical quantities, where one has to prove that the derived quantities are indeed meaningful according to those underlying physical principles and the equations of motion. And eventually, we end up, after variation analysis, with the principle of least action. Normally, physics is presented the other way around. We have examined the origin of basic physical quantities, of quantitative equations, and the genesis of algebra. Thanks a lot for your attention.